Edward Nippers is a visual artist whose large-scale body of work spans across 50 years of practice and explores various genres including figurative, expressionism, abstraction, and cubism. His work has been displayed in museums, galleries, and private collections around the world and centers on the human body. His paintings often depict scenes from biblical narratives and invite viewers to consider the goodness, brokenness, mystery, and glory of embodiment, urging us to grapple with the temptation to avoid, sexualize, downplay, or disparage the human form. Image Magazine said of Edward Nippers that he is without a doubt one of the founding fathers of contemporary efforts to explore the relationship between Christian faith and the creation of outstanding new visual art. But alongside of garnering numerous awards and accolades, Ed's work has been the subject of much controversy. It has been banned, defaced, even mutilated. The nudity and sometimes violent or disfigured forms within his paintings have left some viewers offended at his imaginative handling of the biblical narratives. I recently had the honor of interviewing Edward live at Gordon Conwell's Embodied Faith Symposium in Charlotte, North Carolina. In our talk, I ask Ed about the role of embodiment within his work, how he's handled his critics, and what advice he would give to this generation of emerging artists. I want to thank Dr. Wes Vanderloot for the opportunity to conduct this interview. And I'd also like to thank the patrons of the Makers and Mystics podcast for making this show possible. You can see images of Ed's work at makersandmystics.com or on our Instagram at Makers and Mystics. I'm your host, Stephen Roach, and this is my live interview with visual artist Edward Nippers. Well, I just want to say, first of all, it's an honor to be here with all of you, and thank you, Wes, for having me with you, and Ed, it's an honor to be able to sit with you, and also to be able to sit with your art this weekend. It's just, I've seen it in print, online, in different places, but to stand in front of it is quite a different experience, you know, and, you know, as we get started, I actually just wanted to take a minute and honor you, and that's really what this weekend is, and just honor your faithfulness to the call that you have felt that to create this body of work. And you know, as someone who is a leader of artists and creative communities, someone who is wrestling through the tension of art and faith in my own life, I just want to thank you for being a pioneer. And thank you for taking the risks that you've taken to do the work that you felt called to do. And so I think I probably speak for everybody here that we just want to honor you for the work that you've done. You know, yeah. Well, in the program, it has a quote from you where you say that disembodiment is not an option for the Christian. I'd love for you to elaborate on that statement for me. Why is disembodiment not an option for the Christian?
I think it's not an option in that I think the body is the center of our being on earth and in heaven because of the resurrection of the body. It is essential. Without the body, there's nobody there. You see, we use it in the language itself. And so we have to deal with the body. And I can't conceive of spirits drifting around in any meaningful way without the body for any practical purpose here. This is who we are. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't break up into little pieces. It is who we are. The body dies, something else happens. Mm-hmm. We're in a different realm. It's not the same as we're living and existing on earth the way we are in our day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm. I think that's beautiful because there can be a tendency to separate spirit from body, even in theology, you know, to separate these things, but you've brought those two things together.
I think early on I was struck by this. I think there was a prostitute that just was saying, well when I'm with a customer, I'm just not there. Of course she's there, you see. In other words, she was trying to divide it out and escape from the reality of life itself. And maybe too many of us try to do that, to escape from the reality of life by saying, well, I'm not really there. It wasn't really me. Mm-hmm. No, I was there. I did it. It's my fault.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so. Yes. One question I'm curious about for you, because so much of your work deals with scriptural stories and characters from the Bible, but when we're talking about embodiment, I'm curious how much of the embodiment in your work also involves self-perception, or how much of the embodiment reflected in the figures that you paint also embody your own pain or your own relief or your own hopes. Is there a certain measure of your own person in there, or have you maintained a distance?
I think that you have to, I think you are dealing with a season of emotions, not individual emotions. If I had to get high on my emotional state every time I approached a canvas, I wouldn't be able to work. The balance you're always trying to find is that when you start to think, you do not turn off your heart. When you start to feel, you don't turn off your head. Mm-hmm. And there's a razor's edge between the two. And that needs to be maintained as best you can. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you come to a work, and you don't have to. I don't have to be emotionally involved in a some kind of a way that it would be, I think, destructive almost.
Yeah.
I'm engaged, I'm expressed in what I make, of course I am. But if I'm not expressing something more than who I am, mm-hmm. I don't see it's worthwhile. Yeah. We have to be dealing with something much larger than ourselves. I enjoy taking some art students back sometimes by just saying, who should care how you feel? I'm expressing myself. Well, who should care? Why should you care? except maybe your family and friends. I hope they care. But as far as somebody, stranger off the street. Now, through your experiences and everything that are very much you have to be engaged with, of course, if you can express that larger reality of what it is to be alive and well here, then that's worthwhile.
Yeah.
That's worth keeping. Mm-hmm. But just to self-express, I mean, a baby vomits. I don't want it. That's an expression, but I don't think I want to live with it.
Yes. So your work really goes beyond self-expression to embody a much larger...
The human condition as best I can. And of mm-hmm. course, I'm very limited in how I can do that. Mm-hmm. But I do it the best I can with the Lord's help.
Yeah.
And but it's and we're all involved. Basically, I'm looking at just humanity,
mm-hmm.
and I say we're all guilty of what happened to Christ. We're all guilty, and therefore there's nobody that escapes. And so I don't. I've not been called, I think, to deal with the racial issues and so forth as Mr. Prince has, as Stephen has. But at the same time, someone to me needs to be that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to deal with that larger human condition that engulfs all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all there.
Yeah.
It's all there. But it's that larger foundational thing that the Bible talks about, and it tries to teach us how to maneuver mm-hmm. to get through life.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like we can find ourselves within the characters that you're painting, and it's not just a self-expression about Ed Nippers, but it's all of humanity.
Like yes,
when we look at
it.
Yeah.
That's what I would hope.
Yeah.
That's what I would hope.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I think at the core of the Christian faith, it really is an embodied religion. And, you know, it mm-hmm. really is, I would even say, a danced religion.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, and I think that the incarnation itself and the creative process in the incarnation always strikes me in the similarity of word made flesh and then these creative ideas taking on material form. There's mm-hmm. such a theology in the creative process.
Well, we revere the bones of saints. Mm. I think that's extremely important because we're not just saying these are mythical characters. Oh, we found their bones. They are real. They were real. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. And then at every Eucharist, we taste and see mm-hmm. What is good, and God, and Christ presenting Himself to us mm-hmm. as we take the communion.
Well, even though we have this embodied religion, as we're talking about, this embodied faith, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. your work has not always been well received in the faith community.
Well, I think that the problem is that. In our society, people either know the body, see the body nude only in pornography mm. or in the museum. And most people don't know, have any idea about the museum. Mm-hmm. So they see a nude body and they think it's pornography. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of the basic problem. Mm-hmm. But the faith community, I think that many times, and not at all, but all times, but many times, there are many people that are absolutely orthodox in their theology, but they're Gnostic emotionally.
Wow.
You see. And so they don't know quite how to deal with mm-hmm. that. So you can understand mm-hmm. that they would have a problem.
Yes. Yeah. Well, one of the things I love about your work is that I feel like it confronts our own hidden Gnosticism in our own lives. It confronts right. that disembodiment in our own lives.
Well, I think there should be some place that we're safe to deal with our own physicality mm-hmm. in real time and real space, and maybe that is what I'm trying to do with the paintings, so that you can deal with those things mm-hmm. in a way you don't deal with them otherwise. And the fact that they're large paintings and they're very and they're large figures, you can't quite escape it, and all of a sudden you have to maybe deal with who you are
yes.
physically.
So what would you hope that some of your critics, if you could speak to your critics, what would you hope that they would see about your work that maybe they miss?
I think that I would accept the people that have talked today as my critics, and I appreciate it more than I can ever say. Mm-hmm. So those are the critics.
That's great. Well, we talked about the church community and the faith community and context. You've shown your work in museums, homes, galleries, maybe a few brave churches.
Yes, oh yes. Yes. Yes.
How does context impact your work? Like when you're creating, do you create with a particular place or audience in mind, or how does your work find its way into the world?
No, I don't do that. Once in a while there'll be a space or something I'm trying to deal mm-hmm. with. The large crucifix was done for the art center where I had my studio, and it was designed to go over the huge stairwell, and it hangs out actually. Mm-hmm. And so people would come up the stairs and they would say, "Oh my God." And if I'd hear them, I'd lean over and say, "Yes, you got it right."
Yeah. That's awesome. So, amazing.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that strikes me is that when I look at your work, I don't just see paintings about scripture, or I don't see paintings about a spiritual theme, but I actually feel prayer in the work, or I actually feel your own faith practice through the work, if I'm perceiving it correctly. And so I guess my question in that for you is, how does your creative practice and your prayer practice or your spiritual practice, how do they overlap when you're making?
I think that it does without me thinking. It's too easy for an artist to watch himself paint. If you ever get into that mode, you're dead. You're just making a good painting as best you can. Mm-hmm. But with God's help. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
And so he's a very present help in the time of trouble, particularly in the studio. And he's there to help. And he's there wanting to help. Mm-hmm. And so prayer is very much a part of it. But as far as me having a spiritual encounter of a different kind at those moments where I'm trying to craft a piece of art, he's present. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have work to do.
Yeah.
And the work is that he's given you to do is important. And that's the important thing. If I were just, people say, oh, you're an artist, you must paint, right? No, I don't have to paint. No. I have to care for my soul. That's the point. And the work that God has given me to do is I'm so thankful for it. Mm-hmm. But that's not who I am. I am a child of God. That's it. Who's been given the opportunity to make art. Mm-hmm. And so I make art. But if you get that mixed up, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I'm old and I can't do any painting anymore and my identity is in my work, who am I? I'm nobody. But I'm always a child of God and loved by him, and he has shown it so many ways mm-hmm. that I can't explain just how profoundly he has presented himself to me.
Mm-hmm.
On my tombstone, I've thought about, you know, what do you want written there? And I think I want to say, befriended by God.
Mm.
That's what I want.
That's beautiful.
Because he's done that.
Yeah. You know, I think for many artists in particular, it's easy for our identity to be wrapped up in the work of our mm-hmm. hands because it's so personal and mm-hmm. it touches every part of our being,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I hear what you're saying with this. There's a deeper root to who you are that's rooted mm-hmm. in your faith.
Mm-hmm.
What has helped you sustain that over the years as an artist? How have you kind of parsed out art and artist in your own life?
Well, you just have to realize that it's you're working by his permission, and he's called you to it. And once we had decided that whether I could be an artist or not, and I fought through college and other times, and you come to the fact that you finally say, okay, I'll give it up,
mm-hmm.
and mean it. I mean, mean it. And then if he gives it back to you, then you have the resources of the universe at your control, at your command, because he's there to help you. You're not stealing time from him,
mm-hmm.
you see. Otherwise, you've got this little guilt, oh, maybe I should be doing some good somewhere else. No, mm-hmm. this is the good he has given you to do
mm-hmm.
that maybe no one else can do. And again, as it's been said, I think here today, maybe just for his own pleasure,
mm-hmm.
you see, mm-hmm. which is an amazing thing.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'd love to ask you about, because I'm sure, you know, you didn't set out to create controversial works.
No.
I mean, you seem a little punk rock, so maybe you've got some of that rebel spirit in you, but, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine. She was on the podcast early on. Her name is Marie Teilhard, and mm-hmm. she's a concept photographer. And she talked to me about the difference between shock art
mm-hmm.
and risk art
mm-hmm.
is the way she worded it. And shock art is an end unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just made for the moment of shock. Whereas risk is for the purpose of giving the viewer or the audience an expanded view to mm-hmm. open up new possibilities. Talk to me about that aspect of your work.
Well, I would a lot of it, the nudity, is to make people have to rethink the faith. If I were to put everybody in bathrobes for a bathrobe drama, you know, and you know, like I were doing the church,
yeah.
you're not going to think again about it.
Right.
But if I catch the world off guard, and the worst thing, you know, they think they're being so shocking in the world when they take their clothes off.
Mm.
Well, I show them. I mean, I've shown them. Say, this is what you think is shocking. Christianity can handle this much better than you ever could.
Wow.
And so that's part of that whole thing, is mm-hmm. that I wanted them to say, you think you know about Christianity. You don't know about anything. Mm-hmm. You don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And it can face anything you can give it.
Wow. Yeah, that's subversive. I love it. It appeals to the punk in me. I'm wearing my new birthday Doc Martens, so
ooh.
I got to get a little bit of punk rock into the interview, you know? Anyways, well, am I correct that you've been working as an artist for 50 years at this point? How long have you been working as an artist?
Well, I did my first painting when I was about 11.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but it's changed, as you can see from the slides and everything
mm-hmm.
over the years. But
yeah.
And when the Lord gave it to me to work, I mean, it was it's been 50 years.
Probably. That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't like to think about that, but anyway, I think it's been that long.
Well, you know, it's interesting because even looking at your work as it's progressed over the years, you had a real, what I would say is like a cubist influenced season or some abstract, but then you also moved into, you know, the representation, the physical form. But then it seems like you found a way to marry those two styles of painting. What was that like?
Well, the interesting thing, I think, is that there are some scholars, Russian scholars, that are dealing with early icons. And they have found in those icons buildings that everybody thought were just poor drawing because they were clumsy. But they were always heavenly buildings, and they've all suddenly they have evaluated them and seen that their buildings are being seen from several different points of view at one time. It's cubism. But it's always heavenly buildings because they were never meant to be built. And therefore, that's exactly how I'm using cubism. I'm not trying to be modern with it. I'm trying to find a metaphor to show another kind of reality breaking into ours.
Wow.
On some of the earlier paintings, I was using abstract expressionism to do that. And you can see that in some of the work. Mm-hmm. But no, we have two different realms in which that are interlocking and in which we live. And I'm trying to find some way to show that in the painting and let people know that. No, it's not quite what you think it is. Mm-hmm. It's not an all cubist world, but it is not. But cubism, or quote unquote, in other words, the spiritual, is a major component of how we live in the world.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. That's beautiful. So most of the cubist influence would represent sort of the heavenly realm in your work.
And I'll do paintings now that maybe won't have that because the event that I'm trying to show does not lend itself to that or so forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a spiritual event that's happening in our world when I'm trying to use those things, yeah.
Was there a breakthrough moment, or an aha moment when you realized, oh my gosh, this cubist expression is the heavenly realm and I can marry this with these forms? Was there a moment or just develop over time?
I look back over some of the earlier things and I see it's there. It's somehow there. And particularly in the smaller works. And then they started doing the larger ones. When my wife died, someone was talking about the veil and had visions of a veil, and that's when I started really trying to deal with the movement behind the veil. I'm not trying to paint heaven, but it's the movement behind the veil that we live in, and there's something else going on.
Yeah.
And we need to be aware of that too.
Wow, that's amazing. I love that phrase, the movement behind the veil. Well, this is a simple question, but what led you to begin painting the human form?
I studied at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts one summer, and I did figure drawing there, so I had figure drawing, but I thought I was a still life painter. And so that's what shows up in some of the paintings, the still life. But then we had a large show at the National Gallery on Caravaggio and his influence in art. It was a brilliant show. I went to it and loved it. Didn't think it had a thing to do with my studio, but I went back and saw it again. And after several times or whatever, and just really enjoying the work, these figures started taking over the canvas. There were some large legs showing up, I remember, and so forth. And I realized I needed a lot more work on the figure. And so my dear wife, we agreed, instead of me running around from one life class to another life class, I had an inexpensive place to stay in Paris. And I could go there and study. And so I went to some friends of ours, Frederick Frisica's family. They said, "Oh, the Grand Chaumière is where you need to study. They'll have classes there." So I went and I drew from the model. What was it? It was 6 hours a day, 7 hours on Saturday, took Sunday off, something like that, for about 6 weeks. Diane came over and we went to an evening of Balanchine at the Opera House. I still didn't know what the Lord wanted me to do with, a figure perched at the end of the room does not have ultimate meaning for me, I'm sorry. So I didn't know how the figure was to be used. Mm-hmm. So we went to the opera house that night, and we were able to get tickets, and I looked down at the Balanchine just died, the great choreographer. And I looked down into the middle of the program. It was the Prodigal Son. They were doing the Prodigal Son with the Rouault sets.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
And there, and so I thought, oh my goodness, this may be important. And so I, of course, we were in the nosebleed section. I like to tell people up near the Chagall ceiling. So I mean, you know, it's not too far, not too bad. But when I saw the sets and everything, the Rouault sets, of course, he would take. The famous artist of the Dogliev would take the famous artist of the period to do different things. So Picasso did Parade, and then something religious came up. Oh, Rouault's work! He should do that. But when I saw the Prodigal Son crawling almost nude across the stage and into the Father's arms, it finally dawned on me. It was the narrative that was the key for me, and that's where it came from.
Wow.
But that was that moment of if there was an aha moment, I think that was it. Oh, it's the narrative.
Yes.
It's the narrative.
Yes.
Earlier, I remember in some of the art history, the one thing that Christianity added to the art world, because the Roman world had perfected the figure, had done everything, it was the story. And I think that's what we bring to the world. It is the story, the story. As in France, you have the face. Mm-hmm. We have a visage, but the face is Christ.
Wow.
And that's how the language is used. You don't talk about, oh, you have a face. No, you have a visage, mm-hmm. not a face.
Mm-hmm.
But Christ has the face.
Wow. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about your creative process, your spiritual life, and you know the longevity of your career as an artist, your vocation as an artist. And I know that your faith is really a foundational part of your journey, but what encouragement has kept you going over the years when you've faced criticism, when people have even abused your work? You know, we talked about that before, which, side note, by the way, this is the second time I've had the honor of interviewing Ed, first time in person, but Ned Bustard and I, for a small podcast we did, we had you on, and we talked about this a little bit there, but, you know, you've had your paintings defaced. Mm-hmm. As well as you've had a lot of acclaim and a lot, you know, things for your paintings as well. But through all of the undulations, what has kept you anchored?
Well, I'm not claiming anything that is easy, but I did have a magnificent wife that helped tremendously.
Yes.
And she picked for our wallpaper for the computer a really early Daniel in the Lion's Den. Mm-hmm. Because that's how she felt that I was being persecuted at times. I was Daniel, but Daniel wasn't alone in the lion's den.
Yeah.
So that's it. It's God's ongoing and grace and care mm-hmm. and love.
Beautiful.
You can't have if you have that, you can't be too upset when somebody doesn't like your work. I mean. I'm not painting for everybody. If they can't take it, that's their problem. It's not mine.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for everyone to be accepted by everyone.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us are. But
that's great. Well, I just have one last question. But you know, before we get to the question, just a statement. You know, you really do stand as an example to many of us as one who responded to the call. Mm-hmm. And one who stayed true to the call and stayed faithful to the call. And, you know, often we're just responding to an invitation that we've received.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what we're doing. We find our way through it. I love the phrase, stumble into grace. You know,
wow.
we stumble into grace across the years pursuing this calling that grips us so deeply. And often we don't really know what that's for. But I think that even in your work, today, I think that the images and the incarnational aspect of the work that you're doing, and even the masculinity that is portrayed in a lot of your work, I think it's for our time. And it's very prophetic in that sense, that I see a real prophetic nature in the work that you're doing.
Wow.
And so I'm just appreciative of you stumbling into grace and being faithful to pursue this thing when it wasn't easy and when people didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And to have the tenacity to say, well, I'm not making art for everyone. But my question out of that is, as I mentioned, I'm leading a creative arts community. We're a bunch of decentralized artists that, you know, most of us love Jesus, but we have no idea where we fit when it comes to faith community and things like that. We're just creating work. We're stumbling into grace in our own. But what advice or wisdom would you give to the younger generation of artists who are coming up and they're wrestling with understanding how their art and faith works? They're also trying to figure out where their art belongs. It's rejected often by the church, and it is too Christian for the world and too world for the Christian. But those artists who feel a similar calling to create work that may challenge cultural narratives or risk being misunderstood, what can you speak to that generation?
I would say the first thing that has to be decided is whether you should be an artist at all. You see, that we assume, oh, I'm an artist. And you're, even the way you pose the question, oh, it's my art and so forth. No, I don't think so. This is where the crux of the matter is, finding if God wants you to do this. And if he does, magnificent. If he doesn't, he'll have something even greater for you. So, but you have to give up on this my art kind of thing. Once that is done, then you go ahead and many of the questions that you will have that I hear, they're found in the making. Then you go in the studio and you make things, and you keep making them, and with prayer and supplication, and with gratitude and humility, as well as joy, and you just keep making, and then the answers are in the making. You don't sit around and figure out anything and then go do it, and that you're illustrating ideas and stuff. That's a different thing than I think art is much more poetic and much more poetry than that.
But wonderful. Well, Ed, thank you again for spending this time with me and for being a part of this weekend, and just honor your work, honor the contribution you've made, the contribution that you're making, and the contribution you're going to make. And so just thank you all around.
Well, I want to say thank you to Wes and everyone else that has spoken. I mean, it's just been a remarkable weekend and extremely, extremely encouraging. And to keep the fires burning, keep them going.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Roach. If you'd like to support the creation of this podcast, please consider becoming a monthly patron at patreon.com/makersandmystics. We'll see you again next week. And until then, keep creating. The world needs your art.